This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right. Get to do another podcast, my favorite hour of the week. Hopefully, your favorite hour of the week as well. And if not, get on board, man. It's fun community that we have here. The Bite Me podcast, Texas saltwater fishing, but really all Gulf Coast saltwater fishing. We've been doing it now since 2017. I can't believe I've been doing that long. Captain Scott Null is on the other side of the table from me. I'm John Lopez. This is the Bite Me podcast. You know the drill here. We get your questions via the Bite Me group page, your topic suggestions, your private messages, because occasionally we get the old boat ramp confessional public. Sometimes they don't want to make it that public. They'd rather just kind of keep it kind of quiet. But here's my boat ramp confessional. We have one of those this week on the Bite Me podcast, and it's going to be a good one. It's also going to be a teaching moment, if you will, this week's boat ramp confessional, which is always good. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get podcasts. You guys have been fantastic. I do want to give you a quick heads up. Remember, it's been over about a year and a half now when we had the first of what we thought would be annual Bite Me virtual fishing tournament. Well, hold that thought. I think we're about to get going here in September. We, you know, I've talked about, Scott, and you have subscribed. Well, you do it year round anyway, but challenging our Bite Me listeners to the Labor Day challenge post freeze. You know, release every fish you catch at least until Labor Day. Let these bay systems catch up a little bit. So I'm thinking maybe late September, kind of as a celebration, if you will, of at least being able to take a breath. And if you know, we always encourage catch and release. But if you want to keep some fish and you've been part of that Bite Me Labor Day challenge and releasing everything, go ahead and catch and eat what you need. But in the meantime, we can have a virtual tournament where it is catch and release if you want, and take a picture. It's a really good thing. We'll get you more details on that as we move forward. But I'm thinking late September. So a lot of stuff happening. I sold my boat. I finally sold my Freedom Warrior. I say finally. It took me about 2 hours. I had a great buyer there. Getting a new Freedom Warrior built with Chet and everybody down in Port Lavaca. So shout out to those guys who do such a great job with those hand-built boats. You hear me talking about them here on the podcast. And Jake and JT from the Boatyard, go see them. They're really, really good. They help every step of the way for sure. Captain Scott got foul hooked. We talked about that last week. Hopefully this thing doesn't linger. In the meantime, we got a lot of fishing to talk about. You can get in those questions as you see fit. And we'll start with one of your questions right here. I kind of gave you the heads up, don't be a hardhead. And that's got definitely double meaning, Scott, because I know our listeners hear you and me both talk about profile is more important than color. And you really, you know, people tend to change their soft plastics sometimes way too much. And sometimes they stick with a plastic way too long. And that's kind of what I'm talking about here on today's podcast, Scott, because I can absolutely be a hardhead when it comes to my color and the profile of the bait I'm throwing, especially plastics. I have my favorites. Everybody knows I use Deadly Dudley, but I have others that I use as well. This question came up, and it made me think, I've done this. I've just said, nope. Dang it, I'm going to throw this bait because this bait works for me and always has worked for me. Rather than, you know, a lot of times people keep changing baits to an extreme and they shouldn't be doing that. It can work the other way too, right?
Yeah, one of my favorite things I love to hear, well, they're only biting this.
Yeah.
They're only biting purple with an orange tail. That's it. Well, what else have you thrown? Well, that's all they're biting. I've just been throwing those purple with an orange tail.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you know that's all that they're biting in if that's all you're throwing? You know, if you're catching fish and you're only throwing one thing, well, yeah, that's what they're biting for you.
Right.
But you know me, light and dark.
No, and I know we've established that, and yeah. I'm with you. But sometimes that color change does, that little subtle thing does make a difference. And I can't explain why.
Every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, the difference between red shad and purple makes a difference to the fish. I don't know exactly why that would be because there's nothing out there that's purple. I mean, a whole lot out there is red shad looking. No. You know, I mean, the colors on a lure owl do not exist in nature.
Right.
I mean, I'd walk up and down there, look at all of it. Go out in nature and look for something that's chartreuse. Go look for something that's bubblegum pink.
Yeah.
Yeah. Short of sponges in the Caribbean, I've never seen some of the colors that these soft plastics are in. They work. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they work. Don't know what it is in that little fish brain that gets clicked by a certain color.
Yeah.
But typically, you know, if you stick to that light and dark, you know, according to the conditions,
yeah,
you're going to be... Gonna be ahead of the game most of the time.
No, I totally agree with you.
If it's not working,
Like I said, I've been hard hit. Like no, I use the electric chicken. You know, you've seen me throw it a million times, pink with the chartreuse on the bottom.
What out there is electric chicken?
Nothing.
Okay,
but it works.
I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something.
And it's my confidence bait.
Yep.
And it's what I've caught the most fish in my life on, and has a paddle tail. And I throw the hell out of it, and I can be hard-headed. It wasn't too long ago I did decide, you know what, I got to try something else here. And I put just the clear shrimp Deadly Dudley with a rat tail. Completely, instead of zigging, I completely zagged. You know, I said, you know, I was having a hard time, and I said, okay, I got pink and chartreuse with a paddle tail. How about clear with a red speck and a rat tail? Yes. Now, was it just luck? Maybe. Did I just happen to either walk or drift? I forget what I was doing that day into the fish, and I had not until that moment. Maybe
or all those fish that you caught all this time on an electric chicken would have eaten that anyway.
That's what I'm saying. Was it just a pure coincidence that when I changed that bait, all of a sudden I caught a couple of fish? Or did it matter? It's a never-ending question there.
There's no rules on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Change when you feel like you need to change to boost your confidence.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of where I'm at with it. And as long as you've got confidence in what you're throwing, throw it.
Yeah.
As soon as you start getting that nagging feeling of, and I'm not talking about three or four casts and then, man, this just isn't going to work.
Well, I'm hard-headed. That's why I put
Know that you're in an area that's got fish. Know that you're putting your lure in front of fish. I get that a lot on my boat.
Mm-hmm.
We're pulling every fish that we catch. We can see it, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
And I've had people before go, man, this fly is just not working. Well, let's wait until a fish has seen
it. Until we can see it.
And until a fish has seen it, we don't know if it's working or not because you haven't put it in front of a fish yet. So there's always that.
That's funny.
Once you know that, you know, the fish have seen something and you get a couple of refusals, yeah, then it's time to change.
And you have a good perspective on that from the platform.
It's much better than most folks get.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's very rare that I see fish turn off of a lure.
Mm-hmm.
A properly presented lure.
Right.
And I'm talking about, you know, if you throw it in and it's too close to them when it hits, you know, they run off. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a lure swimming past a fish in the strike zone, and the fish just turns away from it.
That doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. It really doesn't. Every once in a while it does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't say never, but most of the time, a properly presented lure brought through the strike zone at a reasonable pace,
mm-hmm.
you know, not flying through or dragging bottom or whatever, but just a normal good pace, gets eaten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
think we overthink it.
Aisle after aisle after aisle. At Fishing Tackle Unlimited or wherever you get your baits,
Yep.
Have different colors. I fall victim to it every time. You fall victim to it, I'm sure, quite a lot, if not every time.
Look in my garage. I got a bunch of baits in my garage, and anybody that's been in this business for any length of time, as a hobby, mm-hmm. professionally, whatever, you've got a bunch of baits in your garage that you bought, and you put it in there, and you have never thrown them one time.
And probably never will.
Yep. I haven't thrown it a single time. And well, I've told it on here before, one of the DOA events that we went
to.
The candy corn.
Oh, the candy corn, yeah.
Orange and yellow, soft plastic, mm-hmm. orange and yellow. And Ed brought them over in goodie bags. We all, you know, everybody that attends one of these, we get a big goodie bag.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had a couple of packages of those because they just weren't selling, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, yeah, we had a bunch of these. And so they were in our goodie bags. And then he made it a challenge. Mm-hmm. Whoever catches the biggest fish on one of these. So we're all throwing it.
Yeah.
Everybody caught fish.
It's crazy.
We all caught fish on it.
Looks like a candy corn.
And it's bright yellow and orange like candy corn.
Yeah.
Something I would have never in my life thrown. You'd open up a tackle box and there was that and one other color in it, I would have thrown the other color.
Yeah.
I would not have chosen that color of lure. And now, like Ruby Delgado that I've talked about, mm-hmm. she loves it.
Yeah.
And she throws it all the time down there now.
But it's confidence.
But she would have never done it before.
Right.
Until we were forced to try it. That's one of the things. We used to do some tournaments in the early days of kayaking, just kind of friendly get-together type tournaments. Mm-hmm. We call them One Lure Challenge. And you just kind of grab bag, pick a lure. And that's only
each
lure.
One had a different lure?
No. Everybody had to throw the same thing.
Okay.
And just like this candy corn.
Yeah.
Everybody had to throw the exact same lure, and you couldn't throw anything else mm-hmm. unless have a tournament.
Yeah.
And it opened you up and made you.
It's a good idea.
It made you do some different things.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
You know, I mean, I threw lures that I had never thrown before, and then and when it was my turn to pick, I'd pick something goofy and mm-hmm. make everybody else throw that, a bass spinner bait.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody has to throw a white spinner bait with silver blades, and then you catch fish on it.
Yeah.
So every lure that's on that shelf. We'll catch a fish.
Sure. And sometimes, you know, you've got some that you overthink when you should just throw what you're confident in. You know, people don't overthink and changing color from this shade to this shade or a darker this or a lighter that. And generally speaking, you and I think exactly alike on this. And you mentioned it. I like the paddle tail because it just seems more it's going to have more wiggle. And I like light lures, light water, dark lures, dark water. But I got to admit, I went to, I zagged, and it was maybe luck, maybe not, but now I'm confident in that bait. That's another thing. You know, you can gain confidence in these other baits.
One way to do that
is
when you're catching fish, like the earlier thing of all I can catch them on is a mm-hmm. purple with an orange tail.
Mm-hmm.
Grab something else.
I've done that a lot.
When you're catching fish,
especially if it's like a topwater or something that you're not used to, you know,
what's the best time to get confidence in a lure? When you're in fish.
Yeah.
Now you know they're there. Pick a different lure and throw it. And if you don't catch fish on it, now you know that one needs to stay in the box.
Mm-hmm.
And pick another one, throw it out there, and you can start catching fish on it. I did that on mirror lures years, many, 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 many moons ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was into soft plastics. I threw soft plastics a lot. We only had a few
mm-hmm.
To choose from.
And the touts.
Touts. The old Kelly Wiggler shrimp tails what I threw all the time. But I had buddies that threw the mirror lures quite a bit. And I had some, and I just didn't throw them all that much. But one day I was catching a lot of fish in the surf
mm-hmm.
on my soft plastic. And I said, hell with it. I'm throwing the mirror lure right now.
Yeah.
And so I started throwing the mirror lure and started catching fish. One thing leads to another. Now I love mirror lure.
Yeah.
But the same thing can be on top water. So you're in a really good bite, you know, throwing soft plastics, but you've always wanted to throw top water.
That's the example I use a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Do that. Throw that top water. Now that you know there's fish there, now start working the top water. Let's see if you can catch some fish on it. The worst thing in the world to do is be having a suck day. Nothing's happening. Nothing's working. You've thrown your confidence baits. You've thrown your best baits. Well, that ain't working. Let me try this.
Yeah.
that's a real good way to never want to use that.
Well, that's an awful
again.
Bait. That doesn't catch fish.
It doesn't catch fish.
Yeah, because neither did your confidence bait.
Yeah, there weren't any fish to be caught.
The best thing about the reason I use topwater as an example, I've taught, you know, kids, ladies that aren't big fishermen, how to do this. When you're in fish, and then you put a topwater on there, you also see the best way to work it. Not just practicing working it, but what has drawn can draw the most strikes. You know, like some people say, walk the dog, walk the dog, walk the dog, and they figure out how to do it, or they do your deal, you know, with Mary Had a Little Lamb, Mary, you know, every time. But they still are just doing that with the rod action, but they're not really looking at the bait to see what the bait is doing. Because sometimes you can make that, you can sing that song all you want, but you're not really working the bait the right way. So when you're into fish, you actually see, oh, that's what's catching, getting the blow-ups, as opposed to when I'm doing this. It's actually a very, very teachable thing with topwaters.
Anytime you're into fish is a good time to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, learn something new, learn something different. The worst time is when it's just plain bad. You know, you got slack tide, weather conditions are bad or whatever, water conditions are bad, too much fresh water, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's a terrible time to experiment with new lures because you're not going to catch fish.
You'll be
on
turned
it,
off on them,
and then it'll turn you off, and then they just end up sitting in the box. I'm guilty of it. You know, I've got some lures sitting in my box that I've thrown a few times on those days when, you know, things weren't working right, and I just pick them up. Oh, hell, I'll throw this and see what happens.
Yeah,
and then I didn't catch anything.
Never sees
on
the light
it.
Of day again.
Yeah. That poor lure. You know, it's gonna end up as an antique.
Exactly. All right. So speaking of throwing something new, this, I don't know why, it just fascinates the heck out of me. And maybe I'm just a big dummy, but there was this fella that was talking about throwing live mullet, which, okay, that's not breaking news, but he's freelining live mullet with the hook kind of in the back, not the tail, but the back gill on the very top, back dorsal, whatever you want to call it. On a mullet, and what he does is he just drops the mullet off his boat or off the jetty or whatever, and just lets it swim. For some reason, you know, mullet will just kind of they move a lot. You know, obviously we know that. And let it swim with his thumb on the reel, whether it's a spinning reel or a casting reel. He was using a casting reel and letting it swim. He said it can cover 150, you know, or more yards in several different directions, and he uses it to catch trout like crazy. I've used, obviously, cut mullet to catch redfish. I'm going to try this at some point. Have you ever fished like that before? Yeah. We're just freelining a mullet and letting it swim away from you? Yeah, like
you can do that at the jetties, and there's no telling what you'll catch.
I guess I'm just a dummy. I've never done that. I've used cut mullet. I've used mullet hooked other ways and just... you know, in the vicinity that I am, but the whole idea of it was, he said, you know, they have to keep moving. They're always moving.
Yeah, let them swim into the cover.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bass fishermen used to do it a lot with those big golden shiners.
Right.
They'd, you know, hook it in the tail and let it swim up under a dock or whatever. Yeah. I mean, that's just an old way of doing, you know, any kind of live bait.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do it with shrimp.
No, absolutely. I'm just saying the way he did it, I was like, okay, I'll try that.
Yeah. And the other way is hook them through the lips.
Well, he said that's not something that he does, because that's what I've done.
Yeah.
You know, I've hooked them through the lips. He says they just can't move and they kind of suffocate themselves eventually.
Right, they're not going to move as much.
They're not very resilient fish anyway.
Yeah.
And I was just fascinated by this, and I didn't know if I was just dumb or it was relatively new to most people, but I'm definitely going to try this and let it just swim away. I'll just sit there and let it.
I think you said it was in Florida?
It was in Florida.
Yeah, they do a whole lot more live bait fishing over there.
Yeah.
Quite a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You'll hear guides over there and people talk about making bait in the morning. And they go out, guides go out before they pick their clients up and go out and throw cast net and fill up a whole live box.
Right.
You know, their live well. And they'll call it blacked out.
Yeah.
When you can't see the bottom of the live well, it's blacked out. And that's what they go, that's, you know, they call them white bait, and it's a little bait fish. And that's what they use a whole lot of. They also will take the old fungo bat,
mm-hmm.
and they cut the end of it off,
mm-hmm.
and they put their bait in there, they catch enough bait that they can chum with it.
I've seen that a lot,
and
yeah.
You take that live bait and put it in that fungo back and shake it and stun them, mm-hmm. and then they throw them using the leverage of the fungo bat and throw them up against the shoreline. It's not me at all.
Yeah.
And what it's done over there, gotta hope it never happens over here that way. We'd go into an area where a bunch of guides were doing that. Mm-hmm. You cannot catch one on a lure in there. I mean, you just can't.
Yeah.
But you see a guide boat pull up. Dean and I would work a shoreline, man. We're throwing it snooky looking, man. We can see the snook. We're just not getting them. Throwing topwaters, throwing whatever in there, not catching fish. Guide boat pulls up there, spins it around backwards, puts the back end of the boat towards the mangroves, shakes his little fungo bat and chunks a whole bunch of bait up there. The water starts boiling, and his customers, you know, they throw out three or four lines, and everybody's hooked up. It's like, huh.
So all that's right. How you do
it. Well, that's how they do it over here. But I think what they've done over there is they've trained their fish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hell, my fish on my pier know when I'm walking out there to throw food to them.
Yeah.
And literally, you got to come over sometime and see it. You walk out on my pier.
You start seeing the water getting nervous.
Wakes. You see wakes coming from all over my pond coming to the pier. Fish, I mean, you can train them. And I think that's kind of what they've done to some of those snook areas over there. They've trained them that they need that live bait. It's very effective. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, no.
Very, very effective.
The reason that this was fascinating to me, and I'm always thinking about, you know, because I throw nothing, pretty much nothing, but, you know, artificial baits, as do you. But occasionally, you know, some live or dead shrimp with you know, somebody who wants.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
To anchor up or whatever. And I'm like, why? This is something I'd like to see more of here, this type of fishing with mullet and people, you know, maybe cast net, getting some mullet that way. Because it's better than croaker. You know, I mean, there's certain things that, I mean, I don't want to get in that fight. We all know how we feel about croaker. You and I don't think croaker fishing is great and probably should be a game fish. Some people feel very strongly about it. That's fine. I'm just saying this to me could be just as effective. The little 4-inch or 5-inch free lined mullet, throwing it under those bridges and stuff like they do down in the south. You know, why can't we do this?
It would be a whole lot easier on the bay.
You're darn
Instead
right
of having
it would be.
The shrimp boats dragging the bay constantly and raping it for all these little croaker that end up in these. Yeah, don't even get me started on it.
No, I'm just saying.
It's very effective.
And I would fish a 4-inch mullet like that free line because I think it's fun. I think it would be fun.
Growing up, all the old timers that were serious about putting meat on the table, they all fished mullet.
Yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, you know, it's something that we did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've done it, especially during flounder season. That's when we did mostly the lip hook and just drag them across.
Yeah, because you're in a particular spot.
Right?
Yeah, you're in one spot.
Yeah, we weren't fishing cover.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, around docks and things like that, I could see it being very effective.
They'd swim right under it.
Yeah.
They'd swim to it. You wouldn't even have to cast.
Yeah.
That's where I was headed with all this is like, so we're still throwing, you know, croaker down here when you can do that with the mullet. It's something that I'm going to try. I might take a video, see how it does if I catch anything. Had a little bit of an interaction with someone who was fishing in federal waters, and that was awesome. And they seemed to do quite well with the red snapper and the redfish. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Did I say redfish?
Yeah.
So what happened?
It, I'm just, you know, me with my bum arm, I'm sitting there going over Facebook, and, you know, just kind of bebopping along there, and ran across a Facebook friend that had a picture up, and he had there's a couple of kingfish in there and limits of snapper. And then he said, man, something we've never run into before. You know, we were 30 miles out or wherever we were, and we found redfish out there. And they caught two bull reds out there. Well, that it's not that unusual. You know, we used to do it all the time out of Freeport, out of that area. Well, problem is redfish beyond 9 miles are illegal. There's a closed season on them. They're not – they've been federally protected out there in federal waters for many years. And there he is. He's got a picture, and he's basically confessing right there unintentionally and didn't know it. And, you know, I mean, guy obviously didn't know. I mean, it wasn't like...
And it seemed to me, from what I was reading on your the screenshot you sent me, an honest mistake.
Yeah, it's honest mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like, man, we were just shocked that we had him out there.
Yeah.
We looked on our license, and we got our tag out, you know, to tag these. And the tag says, you know, Gulf or, you know, Bay, you know, or however it says it. But anyway, it indicated to him that catch them in the Gulf was just fine.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you're in state waters, you know, you have a state fishing license and state regulations, and then there's federal. You don't have to have a federal fishing license,
right?
But there are different rules. Once you pass that 9 mile mark going offshore, rules change, and you need to know what they are. And there's an app for that, of course.
You have it up,
and I haven't got it pulled up right this second. I forgot exactly what it was called. But I did download it. But I went on to the just to make sure that I knew.
GulfCouncil.org.
Yeah.
Recreational Regulations is the website, and I'm sure you can get the app there.
Yeah, it had a link
as well. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a link to the app, and I can't find. I got some. It's called Fish Rules.
Okay.
And it's a very simple little app, and yeah, it tells you lengths, and it has pictures of fish, and it was a lot of times you get out there and you start catching reef fish at a rig 30 miles out. You catch some weird stuff out there. Not really sure what that one is.
That's right.
It's not a red snapper. I know it's a snapper, and some snappers are.
And what is it? I mean, it could be any number. It could be red snapper or the mangrove or the mutton or yellowtail snapper as well. And so this app and this website will tell you everything you can and can't do. And the thing about, I mean, there are redfish out there. And obviously, I mean, he caught them, but it's going to have, it's not just the little book that you get from Texas Parks and Wildlife. These are the federal regulations that you have to know if you're out there, what you can and can't bring back from those federal waters. That's what's important.
Yeah. I mean, you better know the rules, you know, because it's always been said, you know, ignorance of the law is no excuse. So if you're going to be out there and you're going to go fish out there, know the regulations. So what I did with this fella, I just sent him some message on the side saying, you might want to take that picture down. You know, you just...
I'm doing it for your good.
Yep. And I've done that a few times.
Yeah.
When it's obvious, if he was out there bragging about, hey, man, we go out there and we slay these things
all the time.
You
know?
Yeah. And, man, you ought to go out there and hook up on these reds. They're everywhere. Then it'd be different. But an honest mistake, I'm going to help a guy out. And I've done it before. There was one that posted a while back, and killed this snake on my mama's back porch this morning. And it was a Texas indigo.
Yeah.
They're protected.
Yeah.
And it's not a good thing. You can't kill one of those.
No.
And he had a big picture of it up there and the whole bit. And I sent him a message and said, hey, man, you might want to take that down because you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And that's what I did with this fellow. I'm just saying, hey, you know. And he said, are you sure?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm looking at it right now. Shellfish and other species, federal waters, January through December, closed for red drum. So you can't do it out there. It was an honest mistake. It's one of those things, but it's a great app. The website, as I said, is gulfcouncil.org. You can get all kinds of really good information. I would recommend all our listeners at least to scroll through this thing. you know, it has additional rules that can help you as a customer as well. What you can, you know, what you can and can't do on chartered boats, et cetera. You know, all, you know, like what you have to do in terms of like all fish except for bait and other species taken from federal waters must have the heads and the fins intact when landing through the landing, off the, just stuff like that. The gear that you can use, for hire captains and crew prohibited from retaining bag limits of any grouper, red snapper, greater amberjack, et cetera. So just as a fisherman, it's worth going to that page and at least scrolling through it and finding out a little bit more about these fisheries we have. So I'm glad you brought that up. And I'm sure he was appreciative too, Scott, of you letting him know.
Yeah. And when it, once he realized that, you know, I sent him a link to it and said, mm-hmm. here, you can look at it yourself. And yeah, he's very appreciative that we took care of that.
Yeah.
And picture went away.
Good deal. Yeah. So no harm, no foul. To a degree, right there. Anyway, all right, so let's get back into the bays because I got a couple of things I want to get to right here with you because this is great for your wheelhouse in terms of what you can, what your knowledge is. We've all done a lot of drift fishing, a lot of warming bays, a lot of scattered fish. You know, we've talked about it in recent podcasts last week about Hero and Zero and all that stuff. So I want to do a deep dive into the ins and outs of properly and making the most out of drift fishing. That's not necessarily what you do a lot of anymore, but you've done a lot of it, as have I. And I probably do more than you by far, just because I'm always looking for fish, especially here, Scott, when it's kind of, you're just searching, man. There's bait everywhere, then there's not bait. Just taking a long drift, you know, kind of the way I put it is when in doubt, drift. With the warming bay especially, I like to fish the shorelines. A lot of times the sun starts coming up and I just try to find that highway, as we like to talk about. I start drifting.
Yeah, it's a good way to cover water. You know, just, it's a good search method. Yeah, if you're not really sure about an area and, you know, not sure what's going on, you can drift and cover just miles. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got the proper wind direction for it. Yeah, I've got some places that I like to drift and that on certain winds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got one area near me, if I've got a little more east in the southeast, it drifts me right down the middle of this lake.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can cover it from one end to the other instead of going across. It's a long, narrow mm-hmm. lake. And if I've got too much south in it, then I'm going these little short drifts across it. I won't fish it. But when I can make a long, nice long drift,
kind of cover
there,
the whole spec.
Yeah, yeah. So you can cover more ground that way. I don't do a whole lot of it. Yeah. There's a lot of times I'm fishing the south shoreline,
mm-hmm.
and I've got I pull in and then I drift out. Well, the shorelines around Port O'Connor, the first 50 yards is the best, and then after that it drops off pretty good and you're fishing dead water
mm-hmm.
Beyond the drop off. So you're constantly moving. You know, you're constantly going back in, drifting out, going back in, drifting out.
Yeah.
That's why so many people wade fish around there.
Yeah. Because you can stay on it a little longer.
Yeah. So drift fishing is kind of difficult. Now if it was going to drift me down the edge of that drop off, there wasn't a bunch of wade fishermen scattered up and down that shoreline, the wind direction was going to take me right down the edge of the drop.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. I'm good with that. If the wind direction is off just a little bit, where it's going to push you out down the shoreline, but out a little bit,
mm-hmm.
put the trolling motor down and use the trolling motor to help you stay closer. Use the wind to move you, use the trolling motor to position you.
Right.
Big grass flats like where Dean is, you know, you can.
Oh, that's heaven
if
down there.
You got a shallow water boat and you want to drift.
Yeah.
I like it in areas that are featureless,
mm-hmm.
more or less. You know, it's miles of the same thing. Port Mansfield's a really good example of it.
Mm-hmm.
You got miles and miles of shallow water grass, some potholes. There's no reason for fish to be in one particular area over another area. They move around a lot.
Right.
And by drifting, you have a chance of crossing their path. In the Galveston area, places like that, I drift specific places,
mm-hmm.
you know, a deep, like deep reef, Hannah's, some of those Karankawas, some of those reefs out in the open bay,
mm-hmm.
you get set up and you drift across that reef, then you swing out and make another drift. Cover different parts of the reef. A lot of those reefs have been destroyed over the years with oystering, and so they're not as big as they used to be.
Yeah.
But say deep reef used to be just this big complex of scattered reefs. And so we'd get on one side of it and drift all the way across it, and you were hitting reef after reef after reef. And then you'd set up. If you caught fish, you try to set up on that same drift again.
Right.
If you missed, you know, you didn't catch fish, you move over 50 yards and make another drift. So it depends on the areas you fish. If it's a large featureless, or I keep saying featureless, it's
in terms
it's
of
all
like
the same.
One big, yeah.
Yeah, it all looks the same, feels the same, and you don't know where to fish, drift across that, and you'll more than likely run across some fish somewhere in it. If it's an area that has specific structure, like the drop-off that I was talking about, I like to fish that drop-off for trout. If I can stay on that drop-off with my drift,
yeah,
the longer I can stay on it, the more ground I cover, the more chance I get. Those fish are running up and down that drop-off. They don't stage at one particular place along there. Yeah, you'll see it with a bunch of wade fishermen on a shoreline. The guy on the far left hooks up, next guy to him hooks up, next guy to him hooks up.
It's
a wave of fish coming your direction.
Yeah.
So those fish are constantly moving up and down those shorelines and schools. You want to intersect them. And one of the easy ways to intersect them is to drift.
I think it's a great fish finder when you're, you know, either having a hard day on your on the shoreline or whatever, or the sun is coming up and the water's starting to heat. And that's why I wanted to bring it up right now, and, you know, here in the summer months. I just feel like, you know, you're talking about the grass flats. I do a lot of, there's a lot of oyster where I fish, oyster shell.
Right.
So what I'll do is I'll try to, you know, you tend to get a little frustrated, but, you know, a good long drift always kind of gives you hope. I think it keeps you engaged.
Well, you're covering new water.
Right. I think a good long drift, it's kind of like a reset button. You know, I can be somewhere, whether I'm wade fishing or fishing a shoreline or you know, my proverbial.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hopscotch that I like to do on shorelines. And when you're having a hard time, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go here, and there's a couple areas, you know, let's say, I don't know, the way the, where the oyster farm is or where Bird Island is or whatever, where it's a long piece of shell. We're talking a couple of miles of shell. I'll start shallow and go deep all over shell. That just keeps me, like, focused and engaged, because the next cast is going to be new water, kind of what you're talking about.
And covering something new.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to intersect a school of fish that's moving.
Yeah.
You're moving, they're moving. Sooner or later, you can come across each other.
And I also feel when you're fishing with multiple people, three or four people, and some of them maybe are not as advanced as fishermen as others, a drift kind of evens the playing field, because you can also throw different baits. Yep. Early in a day, I'm working the, you know, the top water. He's working plastic. He's working a popping cork, and they're working whatever else, or just a combination of two, and see if they're high or low in the water column. And I'm big on that. I feel like fish are generally at a certain depth underneath the water, so you got to find that range, and that's a good way to do it with a drift.
Yep, that works. Mm-hmm. I got a picture from Caleb the other day on one of his trips, and he says, there's always that guy. And it's a little selfie, and he's got a guy in the back, and the guy's on the other side of the boat dragging.
Oh, backwards?
Yeah.
That's what they do in Sabine, man.
Yeah, I mean, it works in super deep water, but
yeah,
drifting across flats, that is not going to work for you. Mm-hmm. You want to be on the side of the boat, where the boat's headed, casting where the boat's going.
Yeah.
That's how you drift fish.
With the wind at your back.
Yeah, I mean, we just assume everybody knows that, but that you want the wind at your back and you're casting where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
That's new water out ahead of you. old water is behind you. You've run over those fish.
Plus, you've run your big motor probably over some of it.
Well, mostly, I think it's just your boat floated across them. You're in 2 feet of water, three feet of water.
Yeah.
Fish don't just sit there and let the boat go over them. That mm-hmm. shadow spooks them and they take off.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, you're making noise inside the boat. Yeah, that's the message I got from Caleb.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, like I said, a selfie, and there was a guy sitting on a cooler in the back dragging a lure across behind him. And he said, there's always that guy. And he spun around. He had another picture with three guys on the front of the boat casting. And they were casting in the right direction.
By the way, side note here, what did Caleb, did he get it in the boat without a plug or something? Or what was going on there? He was posting something on our group
page. I don't know. I haven't heard the full story yet.
Yeah. But it's got some good tools that got ruined.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what happened there, but.
He said plug. I'm like, is that the plug on the boat?
I'm thinking the gist of it that I got is that the plug wasn't in the boat and it filled up with water and there was some tools and stuff in there.
There was like an impact hammer.
I don't know why they have it. I don't know why somebody carries an impact with them on a boat. I have no idea, but it was a nice impact.
And yeah.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
The emphasis on was a nice one.
Yeah.
A little rusted up looking. I don't know. He called me in a tizzy the other night because he had lost his wallet. And he thought it was on the bottom of the bay out in Matagorda. And then I got a message sometime during the night that found the wallet. It's Caleb, man.
That's so good.
He is my constant entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
An impact wrench on a boat.
I haven't figured. I got to call him on the
That's
way home.
That's why I asked you. I thought you would know.
No. I remember seeing it a while back, and I thought about it, and then when I have talked to him,
to be prepared.
Yeah.
But I don't know what.
That's a little beyond Boy Scout.
That's exactly right.
There has to be a specific reason why they're carrying an impact wrench on the boat. I cannot for the life of me think of what it is.
What it might be.
I'm glad you reminded me because when I saw it, I wanted to talk to him about it. And then we talked about other stuff when we were talking.
Yeah, we'll get that story for you.
But I need to know exactly what happened there.
So anyway, back to the drift. We went on a little bit of a tangent there. But
Caleb does that to me.
Yeah, he does. He does do that. So you're right. I mean, there's always that guy. And certainly with the wind, some of our listeners don't know. I've been known to drift a long way trying to find the fish. I mentioned, kind of keeps me engaged, et cetera. The other thing that I think is important in terms of like kind of the nuts and bolts and the ins and outs of properly drift fishing is you got to have understanding of your particular boat. You know, I was talking about I'm getting a new boat, that Red Freedom Warrior. My last one. They're handmade. I mean, each boat is a little bit different. You know, you have to know the best way your boat drifts. Is it drifting with the stern on this side and the starboard on this side and the port on that side, or go with the port, whatever, right, left, however you want to do it. They all drift differently, and sometimes you have to kind of tweak them with a drift sock to keep it straight.
You can do a drift sock. I had one boat in particular. If I dropped the motor all the way down and spun it all the way to one side, that thing would drift exactly sideways.
I usually have to turn mine.
It would be perfect every time. Mm-hmm. I had another boat that I had to have the motor completely out of the water. If the motor was touching the water, it was going to spin on me.
Mm-hmm.
You can correct some of that with drift socks.
Yeah.
But you have to play with the drift sock to know where to put it. Yeah. I tried out a boat.
A front cleat, the middle cleat, whatever, yeah.
I tried out a boat one time. The manufacturer really wanted me in that boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing a lot more drift fishing then. And that thing, I could not get that sucker to drift sideways for anything. It constantly seesawed. You could put a drift sock anywhere you wanted to on it, and it was going to...
Oh, front, then
front
back.
To back, to front, to back, to front, to back.
Oh, I hate that. That's when you need a drift sock.
Well, I had a drift sock.
Yeah.
Put a drift sock on it.
And still...
And it would still do it. It would pivot on the drift sock. And...
Well, that's a problem.
That boat drove me nuts. I kept it for a weekend. They let me use one for a weekend just to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Camille out there on it, and we were looking at each other. It's like, what is going on here?
I'm getting seasick.
I moved the drift sock more to the back. Mm-hmm. Well, now the front would take off, and I moved it to the front, the back would take off, and I'd move it to the middle, and it would just seesaw. The front to back, front to back.
Mm-hmm.
It was frustrating as hell.
And also understand, you can tell I've done a lot of drift fishing. I like it. It's relaxing for me. Boats drift differently with one person and three people and four people.
When people move.
And people move.
Yeah. Once you get it figured out.
There's a sweet spot. Yeah.
There's a good spot.
Yeah.
Everybody stay where you're at. everybody keep fishing. We're spread out along the side.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want three guys on the bow, throwing off the bow. Let's spread out a little bit down the side of the boat. And two reasons, it's safer.
Yeah.
But it also maintains the drift of the boat.
And the other thing, the last thing that's kind of a pet peeve of mine. So let's say I'm drifting and I actually, got into some fish, all right? And there's this one area, maybe 500 yards, 300 yards, whatever. I'm drifting through that. And then you just know, as we've talked about, okay, I think we're out of them here. And so you want to redrift. Very common. I do it a lot. Patience is your friend here, man. Just crank that motor, or even use your trolling motor for a while. Go way. You've got on today's charts, on pretty much any, even a handheld GPS, you can see exactly where your line is.
Yeah.
Go way out. I'm talking a couple hundred yards at minimum before you even think about juicing that motor again. I've seen so many guys that they putter out for maybe 50 yards and whoom, and they go right through the wakes back to where they started. And I'm like, well, that's pretty much it on that drift.
Yeah. You want to circle around, way around. Like I said, we used to fish deep reef and we would have 8 or 10 boats working it.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knew what to do. It was all a bunch of old salts out there working that deep reef. And we would all, you drift way past the end of the reef. Go ahead and reel up.
Yeah.
If you had drift sock out, take your drift sock up so you drift a little bit faster. Keep drifting. Okay, now we're way off the reef. Fire up, idle out, make a big, huge loop.
Yeah.
And then come back. And if you're doing it right, even with a bunch of boats, everybody's getting a fish.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's impatient about it. We're all fishing the same thing. We're all doing the same way. It can work. It looks like a conveyor belt. It's a constant.
On my Simrad, I like for it to look like the letter D.
Yep.
In other words, you drift down the straight line, and then coming back to where you started your drift, you loop up that much that your line of where you drifted and where you return to your drift to redrift, it looks like the letter D.
Yep.
I've seen so many where they drift, and then the line back is like a two-way highway.
Right.
No, man, you're right in them.
Yeah, you don't want to drive back over what you were fishing.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially if you caught some fish there. The worst was we'd have them show up out there, and they'd be partway through the drift.
Mm-hmm. And then they'd go.
Oh, man, we're not catching anything.
They didn't have two casts.
Yeah, we didn't catch anything. And they're halfway through the drift and right on top of the reef and then fire up.
Yeah.
Well, that killed the bite on everybody.
Everybody behind you is pretty much pissed off now, too.
Yep.
Sorry. All right. So redfish, this is the other one that I was talking about, a Scott Null special, if you will. Redfish behavior, not just what we've talked about a lot, after the freeze, what are they doing? How's it moving? Are they back to their spots? But just over the course of a long day, you're out there. Let's say you're doing a little bit of all kinds of fishing, but mostly poling, and maybe you need to move to find some red. What is the typical redfish behavior on a hot summer month? I was talking about, I got into the drifting because I feel like the trout really, really, move a lot in the summer months. What about redfish, just general behavior?
Early mornings, they're up on the flats, and they're pretty active.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Generally, the first couple of hours or so. We're talking late July, August, like right now it's hot, hot and still. There's nothing tropical out there. Let's just say, it's just a normal summer, going to be 100 degrees today.
Yeah.
And not enough wind to really ripple things up much. They'll be up there for a couple hours, and then that water just gets hot.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about it before. The hotter the water is, the less dissolved oxygen there is. They'll do one of two things, and no rhyme or reason to it. I can't figure out why they do it. Some days they just lay down. Mm-hmm.
And they're in the mud?
They're in the grass.
Yeah.
In my area, they'll just lay down in the grass and not move. It's like they go to sleep. And you'll see them. They're almost kind of wobbling.
Yeah.
You know, they look like a dead fish up there. And they're just kind of wobbling back and forth. And you can't catch them. You can't do anything with them. And you can't even get them to move most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a trance or something. Or they go to sleep. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Or they move to a little bit deeper water. If they're still on the feed, mm-hmm. they will move to a little bit deeper water.
But not like trout where it'd be a long run necessarily.
No,
yeah.
Generally speaking, redfish, if you've caught them up on the flat that morning and you go back to that flat again, say 10:30, 11 o'clock, it's pretty hot
mm-hmm.
and it looks dead, feels dead. You're not seeing the fish like you were. Look around and figure out where the nearest drop off is.
Yeah.
And a lot of those fish have probably fallen off into that.
Mm-hmm.
Happens more on an outgoing tide. Most of the time when I see those fish that just lay up and aren't doing anything, we're having to poke them to get them to move out of the grass.
I got to tell you a story. But
it's a dead tide.
Dean told me a story the other day. Like maybe you were even with him. Someone was with him, and he was casting at this fish, and he was getting right up next to it, and he finally just paddled up next to him and reached down and touched him.
Yep.
He was so
oh, yeah.
You know, out of it, this red, it was, and then it moved.
Yeah.
It wasn't dead. It wasn't sick. It was just like taking a little, you know, a little snooze there.
Yeah. And
he said, I would cast, and I finally just said, screw this. He went up there and just touched the back in the water, and there it was.
I've got a video of Dean out on the flats out there in Aransas where we were kayaking. It was mm-hmm. super low tides, real hot, and we caught a bunch of fish early, and they were tailing. Everything was good.
Mm-hmm.
And we're paddling along. He points over. He says, look at that. And it was a redfish just laying there with his back completely out of the water, like an inch and a half of his back out of the water, just laying. And we cast to it, you mm-hmm. know, made several casts. We were fly fishing that day, threw flies all around it, nothing. He kind of scoots his boat. We were in such shallow water, he's actually scooting the boat with his feet. And he gets over close to it. He says, watch this. And he gets out and he starts sneaking across the flat on his hands and knees. And he got right up to that fish. And just reached out, and he was going to grab it. And he just reached out, and it took off. I've got a great video of it. And the fish threw a rooster tail leaving at that point. But, yeah, I mean,
that's the difference between red and trout, too, man. I mean,
when it's a dead tide,
yeah.
I think they lay up more like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you got a falling tide, it's getting hot, falling tide, they move to that drop-off.
Yeah.
Incoming tide, you know, during the middle of the day when it's real hot, I've seen redfish pile onto a flat. You know, you got the new water is coming up. You know, if you got a good push of an incoming tide that's flooding a previously hot, deserted flat,
mm-hmm.
as that new water comes up, it's refreshing. You know, it's coming from a little deeper, you know, especially if it's got a good channel nearby. And
right.
It's bringing some of that channel water up onto that flat. It's going to be cooler water, and the chances of them coming back to that flat are better.
You never know what I mean. That's why I turn the key on the boat every time, because I know I'm I could see anything that day.
Yep.
It's pretty. I meant to talk about this last week. See what Captain Nick Mosley did with a customer.
Oh, with the shark,
5-foot shark in the middle of East Matagorda Bay.
Yeah.
You want to go? You want to go do some weight fishing?
They're out there, man. we're in their yard,
dude. This was, and he actually, you know, caught it.
It was released, a solid bull.
Released it. It was a big bull. Released it. I mean, we're talking, you know, 3-4 feet of water there in the middle of East Matagorda Bay. I mean, sometimes it gets deeper than that, but generally it's not real deep.
Bull sharks go anywhere.
And the picture, I'm going to put the picture on the Bite Me group page because it was pretty impressive. And they released it, of course, as you should. And but he wasn't sure if it was a spinner or a black tip or whatever, but
it was a bull. Yeah.
And hour and a half dragging him all over East Matagorda. Can you imagine? You're like waiting, like you're wade fishing on a shoreline, and you're like, what's that boat doing? Oh, he's got a 5-foot shark on the end of the line. I think I'm going to go back to the boat.
Yeah.
It was
well, they're out there. We just don't usually know about it.
I've had I want to say 1.5 near misses with a shark wade fishing because I saw one swim by me and I just kind of scooted the other way. I've had one that hit my stringer.
You've never been to the chandeliers.
I've never been to this. My son went to the chandeliers last year, said he saw a bunch of them.
The chandeliers, that's a daily, if not hourly, occurrence when you go out there.
Yeah.
There's just sharks.
They're taking the fish.
Yeah, they hammer them. They eat your fish on a regular over there.
I've had it one time on a stringer and then one swim by. But they're so, I say smart because I always think it's instinctual, but they're used to different types of nets now and stringers.
Oh, yeah, they figured it out. Yeah, there was a period there where everybody...
Baskets?
Went to the basket.
Yeah.
Yeah, then went to the nets and they went to the little ring with a basket on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the sharks figured that out. You know, that if they just tore into that, there was something good in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just like Christmas for them. They opened up a package.
Yeah. Well, I've told you my story. I had a little 8-foot stringer. This is a long time ago.
Nope. Don't do that.
Never got another 8-foot stringer after that.
Nope.
I can tell you that. I'm 18 feet, whatever it is, 15 feet.
Yeah.
A big old one. I mean, I don't keep them anymore, but if I did, I'd be using that stringer. That's for sure.
Dad had a big trout, probably the biggest trout he'd ever caught in chandeliers.
Mm-hmm.
We were kayaking.
Your dad?
Yeah. And we were kayak fishing over there. And he had it hanging off the side of the kayak. And shark came by and ate it. He ate part of it. What we weighed, it was half a fish, and what we weighed was right at 5 pounds.
Oh my goodness.
It was a big trout, and it just I mean, he didn't even feel it. He didn't even know it happened.
I've had people tell me that multiple times.
They can bite a fish in two.
Well, look how sharp their teeth are.
No effort. But him and another fellow were out there. One of my buddies, it was his dad,
mm-hmm.
and my dad, you know, hooked up, and they were fishing together over there, and they'd run the little 14-foot boats. And they ran it to the backside of the island, walked across, and were surf fishing on the surf side of it. And they were out there standing on the first bar. The first gut out there is pretty deep. It's kind of like being in South Padre.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out there on that first bar, and me and my buddy walk up, check on them. And they're out there hollering, "Hey, man, it's good. Come on out here. Yeah, it's great." And my dad holds up a stringer. He's got a bunch of Spanish mackerel on a stringer. And he's like, "Man, it's awesome. It's on. We're just throwing spoons at them. Come on out." About that time, I look at it, and there's a good 6-7 foot long bull shark that's swimming down that first gut right behind where he's standing out there fishing. I'm hollering at him, "Shark, hey, there's a shark out there." I ain't going out there. I'm sorry. I'll fish this first gut.
Y'all have fun.
I can stand on dry sand and you know, fish the first gut. But yeah, dad's just out there just having a good old time. And finally, they saw him.
Yeah.
You know, they saw two or three sharks. And they came on back.
And I hear and I subscribe and I believe to the idea that you hear all the time. Oh, because I've seen the flyovers on the Gulf on the beachfront and all that. Oh, they really won't mess with you. They, you know, they'll hit the bait and nobody. It's still just not comfortable, man. When you're in the water with a shark and they're feeding.
Yeah. most shark bites. They're not attacks.
It's your fault.
It's
generally like they're you know, trying to do something to get away, and it's
well, you're trying to land a fish.
Yeah,
you know, you're like reaching out to land a fish, and he's trying to eat that fish at the same time.
Yeah,
having them on a stringer is just chumming them.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's all you're doing is chumming.
Yeah, but anyway, that was good. I'll put that picture up, and you can tell in the pictures that they had. That they were real careful taking those pictures too. They're like he's standing behind the shark, like got his chest out and everything. But he's like
he's pretty away from it.
He's not going to jump, is he? He's a little bit behind it.
Yeah, they hadn't dealt with sharks a whole lot.
I never had a 5-foot shark in my boat. I can tell you that for sure.
There's ways to handle them.
Yeah, I see guys grab the tails and stuff. No, because they'll spin on you.
Yeah, shark can bite his own tail.
Yeah, again, I've never attempted.
Yeah, you don't want to play with them.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't know what you're doing with them, don't play with them.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the little ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the little ones on the jetties and stuff, I've caught those and and gotten rid of them okay, you know. But little, I mean, define little, like maybe a foot and a half, I've caught those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I get those
off. But even those, if you're not real familiar with it, don't play with them too much.
Yeah. What's your go-to release for like a foot and a half, 2-foot shark?
Yeah, I can grab one of those the way I grab a trout behind the gills.
That's what I did.
Yeah,
that makes me feel better.
You can grab them there, and then
you squeeze.
Control them.
Yeah.
But there was a video several years back of a guy that was he's fishing a beachfront or jetties or something, mm-hmm. and he's holding the shark up that he just caught, a little like 2-foot long shark
by the tail.
He's holding it by the tail out away from him, you know, and he's no shirt on.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
He's holding it. The shark spins and it bit him right on the nip,
right on the boob.
It got a boob shot and it latched on.
Oh,
it was not like it just, it wasn't like it snapped at him and then quit. It latched on. He's hollering.
Oh my God.
I don't know how many times I watched that video.
Yeah.
That's funny so every time.
No, the biggest that I've had on the boat is those little ones you get on the jetties occasionally, and I just like hammer my hand on the behind their jaw, behind their, in front of their dorsal,
yeah,
and just squeeze.
The best thing to do if you get one like what Nick had, instead of trying to pull it in the boat and all that, it's just like messing with snakes. You know, everybody wants to kill that poisonous snake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the venomous snake. I want to kill it. You know. That's when people get bit.
Yeah.
Is when they're messing with it and trying to kill it and they don't know what they're doing with it.
Yeah.
There's ways of handling a shark. There's ways of handling a snake. But if you're not real familiar with it, the best thing to do is just not deal with it.
Take the pictures with it in the water.
Yeah, take
and then
pictures
let it go.
Of it in the water. Cut your line.
Yeah.
I mean, he's throwing a gulp under a popping cork.
Yeah, $5.
Cut it below the cork.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, cut your leader and just let him swim off.
Yeah.
You know, that's better than losing a hand.
Yeah, no doubt.
Or getting stitches or, you know, I mean, you don't want to play with it.
Yeah.
People give me a hard time about my photography and all the snake photos that I get. I know. I'm not saying
you know snakes.
I'm not saying I'll never get bit because there's always a chance, but I know snakes and I know them well enough that I'm comfortable with it, and I'm comfortable messing with them.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. I'm comfortable enough with them that I know how they're going to react to different things.
Yeah.
And the same way with sharks. You know, a shark is all cartilage. It doesn't have bones. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it can turn around and bite itself on the tail.
Dude, I'm glad I've been doing it the way I'm doing it. To me, that's what I went into trout mode. Like, I know I can freeze a trout if I grab it right behind, you know.
Yeah.
So I just, but I squeezed the hell out of them and do it that way.
And there's ways to handle the bigger sharks, but it's not something I want to try to explain because I don't want somebody to go try it.
Yeah, to try to. All right. So, because if you do, you might end up on the boat ramp confessional like this. And actually, this is kind of, like I said earlier, a teaching moment. And this was from a listener. Again, I won't use their name because, you know, we all do this. I say it all the time. If you've never heard what the Boat Ramp Confessional is, it's basically what you and I and Scott and everybody has done.
Mostly Caleb,
you know, especially when he forgets to put the plugs in. It's the dumb stuff or the bad luck. But we call it the Boat Ramp Confessional. Dumb things you've done. You've left, you know, without the keys or whatever it may be. You've left your boat on the ramp, whatever. We all done it. Swallow your pride. Tell us your story. So this is a good one, though, because I think there's a lot to learn from this, and I know you'll have something to say. All right, so I'm going to share my boat ramp confessional from this morning. He said, I went solo to a shell ramp and launched the boat. Beached it, stuck the power pole, parked the truck, turned around to see the boat about 10 yards from the shore drifting away. Now, we've had similar boat ramp confessionals to this, obviously. I heard voices of several friends in my head saying, never swim for a boat. I waited about 10 minutes, finally saw some guys in a really nice Haney, gave me a lift to my boat on the other side. I guess it had drifted straight across. It could have been a lot worse. I suspect the pole wasn't in good enough, and the weight shift caused the boat to push free for the wind to take. The moral to the story, he says, secure your boat. And don't swim after it if it comes loose. And that's, you've talked about that a couple of times. People, you've seen people try to do that and not end well.
Every year we'll have one or two that drown because their boat took off and they decide they swim after. You can't catch
a boat.
A drifting boat.
No.
I mean, Mark Spitz can't catch a drifting boat.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot harder than you think, and you're not dressed for it.
Yeah.
You got wading boots on, you got whatever. Yeah, you're not in swim trunks and Olympic swimmer. So the best thing to do is swallow your pride, watch your boat float away.
Yeah.
And then
call your buddy.
Wave somebody down, yeah. Call your buddy, whatever you got to do. But do not go swimming after it.
Yeah. And so he did the right thing. The other thing that is the boat ramp confessional part, I trust my power pole immensely. But I always tie off too.
Yep. Belt and suspenders.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to put it. Yep. Belt and suspenders. Yep. Whether I'm waiting, I put the anchor out.
Yep.
Or whether I'm just solo as he is, I put the power pole down and it puts me in a great spot. So it's easy to tie off, but I do tie off as well. There's a reason that they have cleats on docks. So yep. You can tie off.
They make ropes for that.
I trust my power pole. And probably 99.9% of the time, I wouldn't have to worry. But
well, you parked your boat and you put your power pole down. You didn't tie off.
Yeah.
Another boat comes by and is not very courteous.
There's
a big old wake up there.
Yeah.
It lifts your boat and off you go.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it just takes a split second. Doesn't take much. And that can be when you're waiting or anytime. Most of the incidents that I've heard have been because of a wind shift.
Yeah, you know, that happens a lot too.
A big
yeah.
cold front blew in, whatever the deal was, a storm came up, you know, a little thunderstorm popped up and it got to rocking and rolling, and wind changed directions, water came up a little bit, some waves, whatever it was. And that's not what they're made for.
Yeah.
You know, they're not made to hold it in no matter what, you know, no matter what the conditions are. So, and the other part is, you got four guys on there wade fishing,
mm-hmm.
and y'all.
And then they jump
pull
off.
Up. Now four guys have jumped up,
yeah,
and they're gone.
Yeah,
that boat's riding a lot higher in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And think about when you get stuck on a sandbar, everybody gets out and pushes, and it's a whole lot easier than if everybody stays in. One guy's trying to push, the boat's not going to float up as much.
Whose friends are those?
Yeah, I've been in a boat like that.
Oh no, I have too.
Yeah,
hey, push a little harder there, John. You want me to go to the front?
Yeah. I've gotten that one several times.
You want me to sit in the front?
Yeah.
If I sit your fat ass in the water is what I want you to do.
If you ain't going to push, at least get out.
Exactly.
Kind of walk behind us here.
Oh, my gosh. Let's go catch some fish. We're bearing down on August, and it's a good time to catch fish. Captain Scott's on the mend, getting better. But it is CaptainScottInTheHole.com if you want to reach out. Or reach out through the group page and reach out to him or me with some topics or questions. And you'll get a better gauge on when you can hop on Scott's boat and do some fishing real soon here. Also, ScottNullPhotography.com. By the way, that's NULL. I need to do this a little more often. We're always getting new listeners. We have 6,300 almost now, members of our group page. It's ScottNULLPhotography.com if you want to buy some Bite Me gear. Are we doing okay on that? Do we need to order some more? Do I need to get with Camille? I think we got some. Right?
I think we're still okay for right now.
Yeah.
And they're in tubs in my closet.
All right. We'll clean those tubs out. Yeah. Let's get some.
I know we're out of some certain sizes and certain colors and things. I know we're out of.
We'll order some more. I need to get some new stickers for my new Warrior, too.
Yep.
So we'll get that done. But ScottNullPhotography.com. I'm at Lopez on Sports on Twitter and on Instagram. And of course, you guys can reach out anytime and subscribe to the podcast. Fun time, good show, very informative, as always with Captain Scott. Good to have you with us. And until we see you next time, catch a lot of fish. We'll see you then.